Hello and welcome to episode number 47 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I am Robert Rosenthal.
And we today are back in studio at the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning on the campus of the University of Illinois, inside the Armory, where things are just a little bit quieter right now because summer session has not quite taken place. We're going to catch up on some of the topics of the last few days and the start to summer, and also open up the mailbag, as many of you have submitted questions to our email account, lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com, or left questions on social media. You can follow us at light_the_eye. Or if you want to leave questions for a further episode, you can drop them in the comments right here as you're listening along. Robert, we are back in studio in part because you're back after having visited a grandchild.
You paused on having it. I thought you were going to say having a grandchild, and I was going to say I had nothing to do with it. It's the best part of being a grandparent. You just show up at the hospital and bring Illini clothing for the infant and hold him and then place him back in their arms and go sleep peacefully. There is, again, I say this every time, there's nothing better for me because I married a single mom and the boys were 8, 10, and 12 at the time. I missed 0 through 8 and I am making up for it through grandparent time. It is the best.
I like that you know you married a single mom.
Not multiple moms. Just one single mom that I married.
I don't know that you had any other options.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes. I married a mother who had three other husbands, but it's working well.
All right. Well, now that we've gone completely off the rails.
It's all right. It's the summer. Yeah. It's the summer. Everything's late, but the lights are flashing over here.
Blinking red lights on campus.
Oh, it's the best. You don't have to stop. You don't have to wait at every intersection for thousands of students. You don't have to do the dance here at Armory and Fourth, where there's someone in every crosswalk and you have to play Frogger to get across. It's the best.
It is good stuff. All right, sir. Before we get started, though, we have something we must do.
Oh, we must light the eye.
Robert, as we're recording this, we do not yet know the final decision of Andrei Stojakovic. Will he be in the NBA draft, or will he withdraw his name and come back to play for University of Illinois? So I'm naming this segment, Will He Stojakovic or Goakovic? And as a service to our listeners, because we are putting this together before the deadline, I feel like we should just react both ways and analyze it both ways.
Okay. I don't really want to do the second one, but okay.
Well, I mean, but we just don't know.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So it's like a choose your own adventure. If he did come back, fast forward to.
So let's go ahead and, you know, it just wasn't just, we'll go ahead and get the one you don't want to do out of the way.
Okay. Okay.
We just learned, Robert, but we haven't learned yet, but we just learned that Andrei Stojakovic is keeping his name in the draft. Reactions?
I don't like this. Like, I'm ready to go out of character already. Like, I wasn't prepared.
You're making an assumption?
Yes. Okay. Like, I have this assumption that he's coming back, and so, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, if he does go, then it's a sudden refocus on who's left in the portal, have to find someone to replace him. So that's the thing, is like, I'm ready to relax and coast into the summer knowing exactly what the roster is. If he's gone, then it's like, okay, go somehow get the kid from Iowa State. If he comes back out of the draft, he grew up in Illinois. Like, you know, I start to move into like a panicked, how do we fill this role kind of a thing. So don't think I'm ready to discuss a world where he's not here next winter.
If you do go into that panic, do you feel that the coaches need to be aware of options that are in your mind?
Yes. Yes. I'm sure they're going to be all over Twitter looking for fans' opinions on what they should do. So I better get mine out there. I don't know. What do you think? Like, are you assuming he's... Oh, wait. This is the he's already gone segment. So Yes. How do you feel about it?
Well, I applaud the young man for pursuing his professional dreams and feel that if he wants to bet on himself and he's projected as a late second rounder, which is, you know, still not too shabby of a living. I think I read he'd be making $600,000-$700,000 in a two-way deal if he lands there and spending most of his time in the G League. That's at least the take I saw from Scott Ritchie in the News Gazette. So, you know, I applaud the young man.
But he can make more if he came back, right?
How do you know that?
I don't know, but can we talk about that? Are we allowed to talk about that? I mean, that's going to be one of the questions later of, like, there's no thing in college basketball, college football, anything else more unknown right now that fans think they know than NIL amounts. People will be like, oh, Bryce Underwood got $20 million for Michigan. No, he didn't. But people like to just throw it out because you can't prove it wrong. So people just throw out numbers. So we don't really know what any of the numbers are like, even when an official thing comes out of like, hey, we heard this official document said they spent this much on NIL. Even those numbers are wrong. But it feels like you can make a little more than that coming back, right? Like this could be like where he's slotted to go in the draft. He could make more money in college basketball than professional basketball next year, right?
I think if we just got all our viewers together and had maybe like a trivia night and with, you know, split the pot and half goes to the winners and half goes to Andrei Stojakovic, I think we could convince him to stay.
Look, if you're going to do a 50-50 drawing, don't do it with the Brewers, I hear. Don't make people run across the stadium in 60 seconds or else they lose their $13,000. But anyway, I digress. Back to the topic at hand. It sure is disappointing that Andre has hypothetically gone to the draft.
You don't want to see a young man achieve their dreams?
I'm pretty sure his dream is to bring me a national title next year, so... at least in my head, that's how the whole fan fiction plays out. So,
yeah,
I really wish he would have stayed to make that happen. Can we move on to segment B now?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Now, some of you maybe fast forwarded to this because you already know the news. Okay. But we just learned later tonight. We just learned that Andre Stojakovic is going to come back and play for the University of Illinois. And let me just say first, I told you that was the right call.
Yes. Who would have ever thought that he would not come back? Yes. If that were to be the case, God, it's hard for me to like live in this hypothetical and talk as if it's happened. But yes. I mean, then Illinois is locked into top five preseason. Probably something like number three or number two. And unlike last season when you started 17th and you got better and you played much better and Keaton Wagler came out of nowhere, then next season becomes Final Four or bust. Like Elite Eight is the minimum expectation kind of thing. A Sweet 16 loss would be a really rough season. It becomes essentially 2002 again. 01 went to the Elite Eight, got the whole team back. We're number two preseason in 2002, number three in one poll, number two in the other, and then a whole bunch of stuff went wrong, and Lucas Johnson tore his ACL, and a whole bunch of things didn't happen, and they ended up a four seed and lost in the Sweet 16 to Kansas, and essentially, it was a disappointing season to only get to the Sweet 16 when you were top five preseason. So I think it just becomes that season if he's back. That last year was a fun ride, and once you got to the Sweet 16, it was gravy, and then they turned that gravy into a Final Four. This next season would be, gosh, I think Elite Eight loss is a disappointment. You know, as crazy as that stupid as that sounds, it would be like, here's another opportunity to go, you know, win the elusive title.
Could you say, I just had this thought.
Mm-hmm.
Back-to-back visits to the tournament with this team. And when I say this team, you know, with a good core from the 2016 and the 2017. Could it be like it's a couple of rounds of golf back-to-back days on the same course, and one day you might shoot 8 under par and the next day you shoot 2 under par and you're like, oh, you're a good golfer, but you just shot better in the first round?
That's a great way to put it, I think. I think that's excellent. That
I really did just think of that.
Yes, you could have a day where you didn't hit it very well and you rolled in 4 long putts. And then you could have another day where the ball was going where you thought it was going to go and you're leaving yourself 12-foot, 10-foot birdie putts all over and you can't get a single one of them to drop. And the day when you hit it well, you got a worse score than the day when you were scrambling around. I think that's very possible. It's what happened in 01 and 02. Let's just throw it out there. You had some stuff happen. You had the injuries. Some bad things happened in that team and some just some issues carrying over and all this stuff, and it's hard to do. But yes, that kind of thing happened. I think the thing that maybe moves my mind away from that is because this past season was 4 overtime losses. You know, all these games where you had the game go down to one shot and you didn't win any of those. You often think that the next year is going to be, oh, then it flipped around and we won a bunch of close games. And so, you know, that's where my positive brain moves toward, like, oh, well, maybe, gosh, if that was the hard luck season where every close game fell the wrong way, maybe this is the good luck season where every close game goes our way and it's a one seed kind of season. So we'll see.
I would just say the expectations should be high with Andrei Stojakovic back. But
since he's now declared back. Actually, while you're talking, I'm going to check the internet. I mean, because it has to, the announcement either way has to happen in the next few hours. So, you know, you might as well just take a peek, right?
But it presumes I'm going to talk a long time here. And I'm not. I just want to say that there is a randomness. It's less than random, but good teams lose in a single elimination tournament. That's what I want to say.
Yes. I think of it this time of year every year in that, okay, so the Knicks swept the Cavaliers, right? That was going to go that way. If it was a one-game series, the Knicks are probably winning that one game. San Antonio and the Thunder right now, Oklahoma City, like,
look at you talking NBA.
I know. It's back and forth, and it's, what, the series is 3-2 right now. If that was a one-game series, one of the teams is going to play well, one of the teams is going to play poorly, and somebody would be going home quite undeservedly, I think you could say. Yeah. So, yes, it's a good example of if college basketball was 5-game series or 7-game series, you're going to get the best team winning. When you have a single elimination and 2 close teams, it's just, you got to have that. You got to be hitting your long birdie putts.
All right. Because of the success that men's basketball just had, Brad Underwood got an extension to his contract and a bunch of assistants. Tyler Underwood, notably, but several of the assistants got a nice pay bump. And essentially, Brad Underwood has spoken like this is his last job.
Yes. Yes. And I think everything has pointed toward that since he signed the non-compete, saying, like, not only will I not go anywhere in the Big Ten, I won't go anywhere in the country. Like, I am here. I am set. This is my choice. This is my place. And, you know, a lot of the talk during this tournament run was centered around, it's why I asked that question in Houston at the Elite Eight of, you know, when he was at Macomb for 10 years, he settled on this being his dream job, and now he's taken his dream job to the Final Four, and now He's going to set his own plan of when he wants to be done. How old's Tom Izzo now? Like 71, something like that. And he's still going at Michigan State. Underwood is 62. So if he went Izzo's length, that's 9 more years here. But yes, he can set what he wants to do and how long he wants to do it here in Champaign.
By the way, I was just told this. Do you know how old is?
I mean, I feel pretty old at 53. And there's a bunch of gray hairs.
But people are older than you.
I've heard this. Yeah. I've heard rumors. Yes. Yeah.
So what I was told is take the square root of your age.
Okay.
And multiply it by 10.
Are you ready for this?
What?
I can't remember how to do square root. Hold on. We'll do this live. Hold on. Like the square root of 9 is 3. I know. I don't know how to get the square root of 53. I honestly don't know. I'm a University of Illinois graduate. Can I put my diploma on the thing to prove it right now?
I believe you.
But yes.
Go back to your example.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say, a 9-year-old?
Square root of 9 is 3.
Yes. Okay, mm-hmm. So now
what times what is 53?
No. Multiply 3 times 10.
30.
Okay. Kay. So to a 9-year-old, a 30-year-old is very old.
I like that. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm in my 40s. If I hit 49, square root of 49 is 7 times 10.
70 is old.
A 70-year-old is an old guy.
Yes.
Or woman.
Yes.
Okay. If I'm 64, then an 80-year-old is old.
That makes sense. I like this.
Okay.
I'm going to use
this. But now if you're 100, and what's the square root of 100, Robert?
10.
Yeah, multiply by 10.
100.
See, by that time you're old. Then you're just old. There's nobody older than you if you're 100.
Yes. Is there a way to get square root without using the calculator and the square root button? Is there like a way to do that?
Science does not yet know.
See, 53 is a 49, so I'm like 7.2 something.
Yeah.
Is there a way to do this without just trial and error, and I take a calculator and go like 7.18 times 7.18 and then try to get to 53?
There probably is, but we're not going to.
Okay, good. University of Illinois, graduate, right here. Degree, University of Illinois. I put it on Twitter a few weeks ago. 30 years ago. May 12th, 1996.
Boy, you were not old back then.
And here's a surprise. Guess who went into landscape architecture instead of regular architecture because there was less math? This guy.
Oh, let's put 3 trees in. I can count to 3.
Actually, 3 is a thing in landscape design.
I bet.
Groups of 3.
Yep.
Continue.
All right. Women's. I'm calling this segment, by the way, we've moved from the will he stay Akovich or go Akovich to... Eyelights, things you might have missed. Get it? Light the eye.
I like that.
We're lighting
eyes. While I was out of town, your creative brain was working. I like this.
Yeah.
You're even wearing orange.
It was doing something.
Look out, folks.
Illinois women's basketball pulling a Brad Underwood. They have gone across the pond.
Check the Balkans as well.
Yep. And they are adding a center. I don't know if the amount of minutes where she will be in the pecking order, but a freshman from Bosnia is Lana Brenjo. Good with that?
Yes, until I hear the official pronunciation, I'll go with that.
True freshman, 6'4", from Bosnia, and she recently represented Serbia. Don't ask me why Serbians, and I know there's been a long history there, but yeah, there's she represented Serbia at FIBA in the U18 the last couple of years at Eurobasket and also U16 before that, and played with Mega Superbet, ZKK Mega Superbet in Serbian's 1ZLS.
Who else played Mega Superbet? Was that Mirkovic? Somebody played Mega Superbet. I'm going to look it up while you talk.
While you do that, she averaged 7.2 points per game, 5.4 rebounds, and 1.5 assists. Started nearly 27 minutes. This is the I say that pulling a page out of the Brad Underwood playbook. This is the fifth international player on the roster for 26-27.
Sure. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you find it?
Yes. It was Uncle Miho, Mihailo Petrovic, Mega Super Bet.
Good. All right. Good recall. I knew mm-hmm. I'd seen that before. Mm-hmm.
So. Yep.
Anyway, they have done that. Also, the women have added to their assistant coaching ranks with Simon Harris, formerly an assistant with Shauna Green in her Dayton years, and they were assistants together before that.
I think we have seen this a fair bit with Josh Whitman and his coaches over the last few years. Who was the volleyball, like the Penn coach was added as an additional assistant.
Yeah. Meredith Shamoon.
Yes. Yes. So I think it's why success has been growing with football and adding two assistant coaches to every position. And we've seen the success of bringing in Cam Crocker for basketball and everything else. And so it seems to be continuing that with women's basketball and, onward and upward, right? I mean, we're looking for a top four seed next year, so now's the time to do it.
All right, and since you and I last talked, the baseball season has come to a close. It was 2-Q, as they say, when the Illini went to Omaha off to barbecue season a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois basketball, as you recall, played in the first and second rounds in Omaha. Was that the year that you weren't there?
I was there for the first round game and then had a family thing in St. Louis and had to leave, yeah.
But I remember traveling to that and having this kind of sink in my stomach. I'm like, why is this? I'm like, oh, yeah, I kind of associate Omaha. It's a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's only one team that doesn't leave with a win.
Yes.
And so I just remember feeling like, oh, Omaha, this is a tough place to win. Wait, this is basketball, not baseball. And Illinois Hoops won both of their games. But for baseball, for whatever reason, since the Big Ten tournament has moved to that stadium, which, as we talked about last, I think most of what the setup offers is fantastic.
Sure.
I really, if you ever get a chance to go. Just especially if it's the College World Series, but the Big Ten tournament too. But it's just been hard to win there for Illinois baseball in better or worse years. I don't know why.
Last year was just what? One win in that. Was that the weird game with the weird play that made all like Sports Center or whatever? Was that was last year, right?
No,
like,
that was 2 years ago.
That was 2 years ago.
Beat Iowa and then lost to Michigan. Last year beat Michigan.
Okay.
Which was nice because that's historically hasn't happened very much in that event.
Mm-hmm.
But then lost to UCLA.
Yeah.
And UCLA was good last year. They weren't like super good like they are this year.
They're number one overall seed?
Yeah.
I didn't even look. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
They are. I saw you tweet they are inevitable.
That's because they were trailing late in a game and came back and won.
Yep.
They won all three of their Big Ten tournament games on walk-offs.
After going what in the regular 24-1 or whatever, or 27-1?
They went 28-2 in Big Ten.
28-2. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they had a loss to Oregon. They had a loss to Washington.
So their last 33 games, I'm sure they had maybe some non-conferences in there. They're probably on some kind of like 135 of their last 38 games or something like that.
Something ridiculous. So they are very good.
Crazy for baseball.
They're going to have the number one overall pick, but they got a lot of other pros on that team.
Yeah.
So, you know, Illinois finishes a game above 500 and you can tell, you know, the coaches weren't overall pleased. They wanted, in terms of results,
sure,
they wanted better. I do think Dylan Napoleon had instant impact. Pitching staff is headed in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
The depth that everyone is excited about at the beginning of a year doesn't always hold true because pitching's hard and and injuries happen. So, so some of the depth that the Illini were counting on did not materialize because of injuries.
But best you and I were talking about this off screen, but best freshman pitcher in how many years?
I'm putting, you're talking about Aiden Flynn. I'm putting him probably since Kevin Duchesne, who was a freshman in 2013 and anchored the rotation in that super regional year in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cole Kershipper was really good as a freshman also.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Aiden Flynn was better. And
then best, you know, what did Putty finish in all-time RBIs? You told me that stat as well.
It was top three in for a freshman.
For a freshman, yep. Yeah.
And yep. It's up there, too, in just overall RBIs.
Yep.
So there's some pieces in the youth side that I think bode well for next year. But it was a year where Illinois has usually been carried by its offense, and it was not carried by its offense
mm-hmm.
this year.
Yeah.
And that's just unusual. But pitching took a step forward. Defense took a step forward. And with the right pieces coming back, and whatever you know is being added with the recruiting class or the portal, and with the possibility that players can develop and get better, and in fact are encouraged to do so.
I'm strongly encouraged to do so.
I am optimistic for the next season.
What's the portal like in baseball? So I know that we just saw it with Valencia, you know, joining his brother at Mississippi State, and, you know, best player at Illinois just gets drawn into the SEC. Are there, you know, we've seen in the portal for football, some kid goes to Georgia, doesn't play as a freshman, isn't in the rotation as a sophomore, just as like, I can go play
some. Tight end then? Like a tight end?
Yes, some tight end from Illinois who says like, gosh, I might not play at Georgia, but I could go somewhere and play. Are there those players out there in the portal? It seems like when I see portal players, there's a lot of D2 kids and like JUCO kids, big thing in college baseball and everything else. How much is there the, hey, it didn't work out at that SEC school and he was buried behind a couple other great middle infielders, but hey, maybe that would work out with a quick transfer to a Big Ten school.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah.
There is a lot of, you know, I was a reserve, and sometimes coaches had their plans. Sometimes it was an injury,
mm-hmm.
and then you got buried a little bit. I mean, Vitas Valencia, who you just mentioned, started at South Carolina. Mm-hmm. He didn't start at South Carolina. He was first on a roster at South Carolina, and then he boomeranged into JUCO and came back to Illinois. You see that? Drake Westcott, who hit a ton of home runs for Illinois, was at Louisville and just didn't get much of a shot there.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Shupman, Illinois' third baseman, was at Cincinnati, which is, you know, that's Big 12.
Further south, yes.
It's mm-hmm. Big 12. Mm-hmm. And is now playing, you know, as an everyday guy for Illinois. So there's plenty of those.
I did see a map. They have those maps of, like, here's all the schools that qualified. And it's just so funny how it's just this smile across the South. And then, you know, a dot. NIU won their conference or whatever, you know, like a couple dots here and there. And then just every single school in the South and the West.
A crescent from like the West Coast.
Yes.
All the way around to Florida and the Southeast.
Yes. Yes.
It's
almost like the weather plays a role here.
Yeah. Yep, I've noted that mm-hmm. a time or two. Weather patterns are significant in, you know, February.
Yes.
Yes. All right, last thing. Speaking of patterns,
mm-hmm.
since you know the fan experience around here, new traffic patterns coming for football games in the fall.
Yes, yes. Big things.
First take, Robert. This is real. They are, because Illinois football has seen success and an increase in attendance, they are shaping the traffic patterns, and based on where you park, has how you're going to enter the area and how the traffic flow. And I know for certain people like you who start tailgating 3 days out, maybe mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. But mm-hmm. your thoughts on new traffic patterns here and the hard-hitting analysis on Light the Eye.
For one, it's kind of funny. You know, you saw some grumbling of like, oh, I'm supposed to wait. I have to come to – but I come from here and I have to drive through Lincoln and blah, blah, blah. Look. I get a parking pass to most road games, wherever the media lot is. And almost every school does this and has done this. Of like, if you're going to this lot, you have to enter through here. And some have portals with a cop station. You have to show that cop your pass. They will let you into that road. And then when you get to whichever lot is your lot, then you're, you know, showing them the pass and they're scanning it. This is across the Big Ten of how it works. We never had to do it because we never had sold out crowds. And so it's a good thing. It's an interesting thing. I had heard a lot last season of how St. Mary's, especially going over to Neal, had become a mess because for those research park lots, the mostly pay day of the game lots, you would turn off of Neal onto St. Mary's, go under the train tracks, and then turn right into those lots there. But there's also people coming St. Mary's from even coming down Oak Street to get to those lots and across. So there's a big long line of people trying to get into those lots, and it made that intersection at St. Mary's and Oak a total mess. So now it's, you can't get, if you're in lot 31, you can't come in at St. Mary's anymore. You have to come in on Kirby or Stadium if you're going to go to 31, because, you know, a lot of people would just kind of turn right there and then come up Oak to get there. Sorry, you can't do it. It'll make it much easier for people to just take St. Mary's if they are going to the research park. And a lot of people are going to have to come up first now instead of Neil if you're coming up from the south. People in like lot 45, that's the lot, you know, across from the cemetery and the assembly hall, the lot there on the corner of 4th Street and Kirby, or I guess it's Florida there since we're in Urbana. But that lot 45 right in front of, you know, Bielfeldt and all that, that grass lot, now you have to come in from Lincoln. You have to, you know, if you're coming from Springfield, you got to go all the way over to Lincoln, either from the south or the north, and then come in on Kirby that way. There is no entrance from anywhere in Champaign to get to that lot. So it's going to be significant, but look, this is how it has to happen. We're selling out games now, folks. Got to do it. This is how it goes.
Hey, it's the price of success.
That's right. That's right. Best news we could get in the off season is they anticipate similar crowds, and we're gonna have to deal with the same parking and getting in and getting out issues.
All right, when we come back, let's dive into the mailbag. Thanks for all your submissions to Light the Eye Podcast. That's all four words together, lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. And thanks to you that made social media submissions. Or if you have for future episodes, you can leave them in your comments here below. But we'll answer a few of them at least right after this. This episode of Light the Eye presented by Logic Coworking and Logic Events. Inside Logic Coworking is some fantastic event space where you can host your next event. Maybe it's a professional luncheon or a networking opportunity. Logic staff will be there to help you from start to finish. They're friendly and they'll guide your guests. And they are partnering with Blue Dragonfly Catering to provide farm-to-table inspired menus and fresh seasonal ingredients. Able to accommodate most any dietary needs, and they'll provide the flatware and plates and everything in between. Then the event space has all the AV equipment and microphones and on-site staff support you'll need, plus the tables and chairs and the nice tablecloths and all that. Whether it's a one-off event or something you're going to set up on a regular basis, trusted local partners, one seamless luncheon experience. Check out Logic Events. Mailbag time. We got plenty to go through here. So we'll get to a few of them at least. And we're going to do a second part next episode. This is from Mark C. Emailed us. Hey, Robert and Scott, a few questions for you. I'm getting married in a few weeks. Congratulations. We managed to have our signature drink be a blue guy. What was or is your favorite bar drink at Illinois? I wasn't much of a bar guy, but what's a blue guy?
That's Cam's drink. It's the blue drink at Cam's.
All right. Congratulations. Robert, with Ty Rogers going to Boise State, will you go to one of their games the next time you're in Idaho?
Which should I answer first? The first one or the second one? Drink? Yes.
Go ahead.
I wouldn't say blue. So here's the thing. Like, signature drink, I don't know if it was really a thing in 1992. Oh, wait. I was still 20 in 1982. In 1993, when I turned 21 and drank for the first time at a bar in Champaign. It was more... I'll say it this way. My favorite drink at Illinois was the cheapest beer night. I'll tell this story. I went down to Charleston on like a Tuesday night once to join some friends who went to Eastern because they had nickel beer night. Quite literally one, you would put a nickel on the bar and they would give you a beer. Cheap was the way. As far as favorite bar, I was a C.O. Daniels guy. I was not a Cam's guy at the time. C.O.'s was just down the block from Cam's, and that was my spot. All of my time spent at bars in the early 90s, I would say more than half was at C.O.'s.
And then you're going to go see Ty Rogers at Boise State.
You know, it didn't really even occur to me until I read this question that I could do that. Now, where my son lives is about 2 hours and 20 minutes from Boise. By the way, it's Boise, not Boise. When you're out in Idaho, don't say Boise, Idaho. People will correct you. It's Boise.
My bad.
You're welcome. No, I'm just saying, like, everyone in the world says Boise. And then you get there and people are like, no, it's Boise. Boise.
Okay.
I think I'm going to make this happen if I'm out there next winter. I kind of talked about maybe doing that because RJ Keene was there. Richard Keene's son played at Boise State for the last 4 years. He actually has another year of eligibility. He's going to play at NC State this fall. I don't know if people know that. And I kind of wanted to go see him play since Richard Keene was in Illini while I was here in school. If I can make that happen, we do... My wife and I do fly into Boise a lot and then rent a car and drive over to where my son lives. So if I can make it happen, that's a great idea. I would love to see Ty play.
Okay. Jacob emails, two-parter, what are you most excited for and what are you most nervous for about the new defense? I feel like I was on an island thinking Aaron Henry was a fine defensive coordinator. I thought not having Juice Clark or Xavier Scott together for any game really hurt the D last year. I thought Xavier, or X, was the best player on the team going into last season. Hauk seems to have negative charisma, and I can't listen to him speak without getting underwhelmed with each passing moment.
Ah, the off season when our insecurities boil to the surface, my own included. I'll take the last part first. People forget that you want negative charisma for a defensive coordinator. You want the hardened guy who doesn't care about anything but missed tackles and wanting to throw his hat on the ground when somebody misses a tackle. So
I don't know what exactly negative charisma is, but in a football context, Kurt Cignetti comes to mind.
Yes, 100%. That's a great, great point. I think that's what they're going for is just a little more of a hard-nosed defense. It's going to look, the tackles for loss are going to increase. The 23-yard run by the other team is going to increase, I think. We've talked about this before that, you know, a frustration for fans the last few seasons has been seeing Miles Scott 21 yards off the line of scrimmage at the snap. And why are they allowing all these soft underneath passes to happen? And people would point out they just don't give up big plays. You know, everything is limited. It's bend but don't break. It's, you know, when Wisconsin broke that super long run, it was the first really, really, really big play against the defense in a long time. People were frustrated with that kind of a thing. This is going to be different. I would guess the tackles in the backfield, the tackles for loss are probably going to double with a more aggressive defensive scheme, but then they're going to be blitzing or stunting off of one edge, and suddenly the other team has a 33-yard run, and that's just something we haven't seen. So it's going to be different. I'm excited to see what the new thing is. This is the fun thing of being a fan of a team that has rebuilt the program, right? Like, the fun thing about that is that you get to see something different. And Coach B thinks, hey, I'm in favor of shifting our defense. Everybody has, in the last few years, copied what we've been doing. Everybody has that same kind of odd man front kind of thing we'd been doing. let's try something different and let's get it out of this coaching tree and, you know, let's see what that is. So, you know, might be a little brand new defense. We've seen that before. The first few months are like, ooh, the calls are different. And, oh, my assignment is completely different now when I went on this kind of like a blitz, blah, blah, blah. It'll be interesting. But I really do think, you know, it's fun to dig into a scheme change. And, you know, this is the time to do it when the roster turns over like this. And let's see what we got.
You have to remember, every defense gives up something.
Yes.
Every defense is designed to mitigate risk in certain areas and offer up a little bit more in others. I mean, ideally, you are able to, with individual talent, squash all passing and running attempts.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be more aggressive in the backfield with against the running game or the passing game, you're going to give up something back. If you're going to play a safety deep off, you're not going to give up big plays, but you're going to keep everything in front of you and make it harder for the team to score on you when the field shrinks.
Yep, totally.
So don't look at any one weakness on a defense and assume, therefore, the defense just doesn't work. There's a lot of things. I think the hardest thing to evaluate about this going into this year will be there's a lot of new pieces. The secondary are going to be the veterans of the program.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot of new faces everywhere else. And some of the guys that are back are going to be doing things differently. The secondary as well, but they're kind of together as a unit. So I sort of hold them in a different spot. And there's just going to be a learning curve.
Yep. Well said. Well said. It's, I always say to people, like, look, the worst offense in college football will still gain like 250 yards a game, right? You know, like you could be a terrible offense and still just connect on a few passes. People expect like, well, if they're going to be a good defense, they only give up 100 yards a game. No, offenses, even bad offenses, are going to move the ball. That's not how this sport works. You're not just like preventing everything from happening. But you're making big plays and you're getting turnovers and they want to increase the interceptions that had fallen off the last few years and they want to be more aggressive and do more things and get some of those numbers moving in the right columns and lower the scoring totals and everything else. And this is the way they're going about it.
Zane says, our friend Zane Bando says, well, what is a good ceiling for Illinois football this season, considering how much it lost in the offseason? And keep up the great work.
Thank you, Zane. I would say I saw an over-under headed at 7.5. I feel like that's a little high. Look, we had 18 players back from the Citrus Bowl last season and won 9 games. Now you have 8 starters back from the Music City Bowl. Any team in the country with 8 starters back, there is going to be a shift. And there's going to be maybe a rough September as you get things going and everything else. Now, the schedule is pretty solid. You know, there's a lot of rebuilding teams on the Illinois schedule. You've got UCLA with a first-year coach. You've got Michigan State with a first-year coach. You've got Purdue with a, what, second-year coach. You've got, you know, Maryland is treading water right now. You've got a lot of opponents on the schedule, Northwestern, that you should beat. So that sets up well with, you know, a lot of question marks around Duke and they're coming to Champaign. So the schedule sets up pretty well. But I don't know. I feel like the ceiling is much higher now than it used to be. We are in this 6-6 is a bad year and 9-3 is a really good year kind of a arrangement now. So I would say the ceiling is probably 8 wins. When you only have 8 starters back, you got Oregon, you got Ohio State, you know, you got a couple very likely losses on there. I would say the ceiling is 8-4 and the basement is 5-7 and you want to hit some target somewhere in there.
Well, I think that's reasonable. I would be, I don't want to say impressed. I would be surprised if it was above that. I would say I would be impressed if it was above that, given the factors. If you just said, here's a college football team, and here's their history, They're coming off back-to-back bowl wins, 19 wins combined in the last 2 years. But this is the turnover they've had on their roster, and this is the turnover they've had in their coaching staff. Oh, this is probably going to be a lower year, but not definitely. And I would say it'd be impressive if they got them very above what you just said. But I also now think there's enough history of the coaching staff and the kind of roster that they put together and the things that they value and the principles they operate by to expect or anticipate 5-6 wins.
Yeah.
And of course, we know there was a time when that was like, let's throw a party. And now it'll be sort of, yeah, that's the floor. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. There hasn't been a season with this few returning starters in a long time. I'd have to look that up. But, you know, 2023 was a overhaul of the 2022 season. And, you know, Altmyer was coming in as the new quarterback. And you had a lot of questions about, you know, both offense and defense going into that season. And it ended up 5-7 with a whole bunch of close games going down to the wire and everything else like that. I think the program's in a better spot now, but this is fewer players coming back. This is, look, the UAB game in early September, people are going to look at their programs a lot and say, like, who, wait, I don't think I only know like three numbers on this defense. And like, wait, who's the, do I know any of these offensive linemen? You know, it's going to be one of those kind of years. And when you have that kind of year, it's usually a step back. I don't expect, you know, 10-3 Citrus Bowl kind of thing. I expect a program at a much higher level, but when you lose a lot of starters, there's going to be something going on.
All right. One more. I'm glad this person put this on just because it is very topical right now. What are your thoughts? This is from Pullen Illini. What are your thoughts on the current state of the CFP and the talk of expansion? For a long time, the goal in college sports was to get to the best bowl game you could win your conference. Now it seems the focus is turning to the CFP. Coach Bielma seems to be part of the contingent that's pushing for further expansion, likely because it would give us a higher likelihood of getting in, with our success of the last few years being good but not quite good enough to really be in the teams, really in the conversation. Open any thoughts in general on the topic. Can I start?
What's that?
Can I start?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I just thought I'd answer it first. Just
do it.
Because most of the time they just want to know what you think.
No. I want to know what you think.
What I think, 24 seems like a bit much. Mm-hmm. I would have been fine with 16. I'm not opposed to 24. If so, I'm glad that I'm assuming conference championships would go away because it seems to add an unnecessary step in there. There is some people, I mean, as we're recording this, you know, it's a week of the SEC meetings. So there's always the bluster that's going on that comes out of Destin down there and somebody's naming it like, of course, coaches are for more expansion. Same with the basketball tournament, mm-hmm. because if you make the playoffs, that equals success or job security.
Yep.
So, I'm not saying specific. I don't know if this is Coach Bielma's line of thinking, but just in general,
yeah.
If you widen the net there, or I don't know, yeah, they're going to be in favor of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be cool though, so I'm in favor of an expansion. 16 would be fine. Because is 24 necessary to really identify the top team in the country? I would say no, only because I think we all knew who the best teams were when we were just doing four.
Yes.
But from an entertainment standpoint, if it all is moved up earlier and the season ends earlier, which I know the coaches have come out, they want the season to be done sooner, I could be for it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there, I answered it.
It's interesting how the 24, you know, like last year, Illinois was, what, 26th in the final poll, something like that? Yeah, I think 26th. If there had been a 2014 playoff last year, like the Wisconsin loss would have been the most devastating loss in 20 years in Illini football, because Illinois would have been set up for being in the playoff just beat Wisconsin and Northwestern and you're in the playoff, and losing to a, 4-8 Wisconsin team would have been devastating. That's just the new world this is setting up to be. I don't say I like it. I don't like the Citrus Bowl has always meant a lot to me. I wanted to get back there since 1990. I wanted to return to the Citrus Bowl. And, you know, in the last few years, it has been the best SEC team to just miss the playoff against the best Big Ten team to just miss the playoff. And I've enjoyed that. And I like that. In this new setup, that's nothing. It isn't what it used to be. So this question is asking, you know, for a long time, the goal in college sports was get to the best bowl game and you could also win your conference. I've grown up on that. I've spent my entire life in that mold. I even defended it when the playoff expanded to 12, that like everybody thinks that the bowls don't mean anything. The bowls still mean a ton to me, and these last two bowl wins mean a ton. But on the flip side of that, if it does go to 24, yeah, if they do let the rest go to bowls, there is a step back for what those bowls mean. Yeah. Everything in the postseason will be about making the playoff. And it is what it is. I don't like it. I'd prefer not to go there, but it's where it's headed. And so then that moves to get to 9-3 or 8-4 to put yourself in the playoff conversation. Is that something Illinois can do? Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. And they can do that under this coach. And I'm ready to adapt to that. And I'm ready to say, like, okay, two early season losses to Ohio State and to Oregon. That's fine. That's fine. Gosh, if we can win that game against Iowa, we are in a position to make a move for the playoff. You know, I'm ready. I'm ready to, I can have that. I can live in that world. I'm ready to do that. I just will miss the whole, you know, what it used to be.
Change is hard.
Yes. Yes.
Last question. Where does Illinois now rank in funding with the Big Ten in respect to NIL-funded sports, especially football? Okay. Right here.
Oh, love it. Look
okay,
at
I'm gonna do a Robert, all right?
All right. Zoom right on in.
Well, we can't zoom.
Okay.
But I'm just gonna tell you.
Yes.
I'm gonna tell you where Illinois ranks, and then you're gonna know I'm lying. Because nobody knows. When you see something that tells you where schools are ranked compared to each other,
amen.
Don't believe it.
Amen.
They could be right because they're just making it up. But they don't know. So don't
throw in the
it.
Jordan. Throw in the Michael Jordan. Do it. Stop it. Get some help. If you find yourself believing what you read on Twitter, that all these programs have 20 million in NIL and Illinois and Michigan State don't, or whatever the stupid tweet. Here's my rant on it.
I thought we covered it well.
Yes, here's my rant on it. Remember when parents, or usually it was an uncle, would send you an email forward in 2004?
Yeah.
And it was just full of just
prince in Africa?
Yes, yeah. 100%. Remember those days when you're like, how does my uncle think this is real? How do they believe that this is real? People need to look themselves in the mirror and realize that when you're believing what you see about certain rosters and NIL numbers, you are your uncle believing there's a Nigerian prince with money to offer as long as you send him $2,000. That's who you are. These are unverified people on Twitter saying random things and people are believing it. You are your uncle. I'm glad you looked people in the eye. Oh, I love that.
All right. A couple more things to share. We know some game times for football. That came in today. Illinois' season opener against UAB will be Thursday, September 3rd. It'll be a night game, an 8 p.m. kickoff.
I can tailgate around that.
Yep. And then the September 5th game against Then the September 12th game against Duke is a 2:30 kickoff. And the September 19th game, those are both Saturdays, against SIU is a 1 p.m. kickoff.
Wait, for real?
For real, for real.
Wait, SIU is a day game?
Yeah.
Really? I would have. Where's my September night game? I've had a September night game every year for long, 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 long time. SIU is not a night game?
I'm telling you, I would have bet me.
Thousands of... Okay, well, now I've got something to process. I'm learning this from you right now, and I need to process it because there is always a September night game where I can tailgate from 7 to 7 and then go into the game. So I'm going to have to adjust to this news.
Well, you've got night games in November.
Right, but that's November. I need a September, the leaves are just starting to turn game. It's part of my life. It's part of how I adjust to the world. To fall coming, I...
Thank you, Tony Petitti, for hearing this input and making the adjustments.
I'm going to need some time with this information. It's not a night game. Why do you even play SIU in September if it's not a night game?
On our next episode, we're going to visit with Illinois football's general manager, Pat Embleton.
It's not a night game.
And we will also look into some more of your mailbag questions. Appreciate everybody who's chimed in. There's more to get to.
Serenity now.
We'll do that next time. Thank you to the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning here at the University of Illinois inside the Armory. For Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. We'll talk to you again next time when we light the eye.
When we schedule a night game for us. I'll stop.
Turn off the lights.